then that would be so much of anarchy.
Yeah.
So much. Like, I would have my own version of freedom. Now, my own version of freedom is so nice. Maybe some other people's freedom is so harsh.
Definitely.
Maybe, as we can see right now in the world. Like,
definitely,
there are many people who believe that they have freedom.
Yes.
So they go for stuff that are so unhuman. And they call it freedom.
I just want to have one great example here, because, like, it's a concern matter for some people who live in those states. Like, the license of carrying your own weapon in some states,
Yeah. It
is a sort of freedom based on the constitution of a country. And then you can see the consequences. I mean, the ramifications.
And if you use it, is it still the human right? Is it still freedom?
They would say yes, because you're trying to protect your properties.
Oh, what if the entire humanity is actually a threat to my property?
They would say defense is an act. They say you are entitled to your right to defend yourself, your property, your wife, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But the case you want to use it, that's the controversial that comes out of that situation.
Oh, yeah. See? That's the concept of freedom.
Yes.
Wherever you get into it, there comes a problem out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no such a thing as an absolute freedom. At least in this world.
True. But something that we really suffer from these days are a sort of, I don't know how to put it, like psychological freedom, mental freedom, spiritual freedom, this sort of freedom. Not the freedom that we have access to a certain
mm-hmm.
object, or, I don't know, to do whatever we want. A sort of freedom, a sort of relief that we are not in a slave with a sort of, I don't know, relationship or object.
But that is very difficult.
Do you have any example?
Like, for example, psychologically speaking,
yes,
if you want to talk about people who've been traumatized,
mm-hmm.
If you take it metaphorically, then they have been enslaved by all those traumas.
Mm-hmm.
Would we offer them a way to get them out of all those problems and troubles their mind is suffering from?
Like, they find themselves trapped in a loop or something? They cannot get out of it?
It's not just about a loop. Like, for example, they had a problem in their childhood. That problem has been there forever, since forever.
Yes, yes.
They get 40. Till the age of 40, they meet a therapist so accidentally. And then they figure out, okay, that I have been traumatized. For example, the reason of me lying all the time is because of that trauma.
Uh-huh.
Or the reason of me seeing all these horrible nightmares is because of that incident or experience I had in my childhood, for example. Would we offer them any way to bring them out of that entanglement, out of the entanglement of their traumas? Well, personally, I would say, based on whatever I have read or based on whatever I can actually make the head and tail of them in my mind, I would say that fully no.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way for a human being to get fully released from the burdens they are carrying with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
In their brain, mentally, I mean.
But in these cases, if they want to just find themselves released again from all those
mm-hmm.
trauma they have experienced in their childhood, what should they do? Like, should they find an expert to talk?
Of course. I told you, a therapist would diagnose that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that diagnosis, what happens is that the way of treatment, but if you ask me, they're fully relieved or cured, I would say no. Maybe they claim yes, but I would say no. Because I do believe that still the traces would be there, because your brain is not like a clean slate.
You cannot undo it.
You cannot. Once you're in it, there's no way out of it. Yes, you can help yourself to appease it, to alleviate it, but then to wipe it out,
mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
It's not realistic, but you can have a control over.
Of course, you can have a control over that. They would give you maybe some medical treatments would come in as well.
Mm-hmm.
But then, if I want to be so free, then I might sound and seem like a schizophrenic person, and
mm-hmm.
then that would be so difficult for the entire society to take me in.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if we come to think about the concept of freedom with a logical brain, with a brain that gets to know what's the equal of 1 + 1, then you would admit that there is no ultimate freedom. What's there is an actual controlled version of freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could have freedom, but to some points.
Exactly.
Whatever you do, it's just restricted.
I think the balanced version would be to define freedom. It would be like a person should have opportunity to fulfill their potential capabilities, to have the right to practice their religion, mm-hmm. Or study, I don't know, start a family, and to do what he's best at that thing.
Exactly. So if we want to take it that way, as you just said, freedom would be just to the point that you could have your basic needs and accomplish what's best out of you.
Yes.
That is the freedom we could have in this world. So I guess if we want to talk about freedom, there'd be still a lot of points to mention, but time is flying so fast. Since time's up, we would talk about freedom. Actually, there would be a sequel to this session. And yeah, thank you for staying with us until another session. I just bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Life as you know, you reap what you sow, and when you do good, Allah will protect you and stop you falling down. Allah, we surrender, 'cause he knows all, no compromise.
thank you for joining us. The series of recognitions of the Palestinian state around the world, the continuation of the war of extermination, destruction, and displacement in Gaza City, the Israeli fear of the possibility that soldiers of the occupation might be killed or captured by the resistance, the escalation of attacks in the occupied West Bank, as well as the intensification of rocket and drone launches from Yemen against the Israeli entity, and the repercussions of the crossing incident between Jordan and the lands of the occupied West Bank. These are the topics that will be the focus of discussion in this episode with Dr. Ali Hamia, military and strategic researcher, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Doctor.
Thanks for having me with you today.
Actually, the recognition of the Palestinian state will not change anything on the ground. And a conference at the United Nations under Saudi French sponsorship is nothing but a theater. However, Israel is not happy about this, according to the expression of the Zionist ambassador to the United Nations. If the recognition of a Palestinian state will not change anything on the ground, as the Israeli ambassador to the UN highlighted, then what's behind this sweeping Israeli anger behind this recognition by Zionists, whether in Netanyahu's administration or even political opposition?
Well, let's see first. The main key word in this subject is, if it is a play, it's a theater, it's true. Before starting the recognition of the Palestinian state on the 4th of June,
yes,
1967, could this powers stop the killing and the genocides and the ethnic cleansing that been continued by the Israelis against the Palestinian? Well, first, we know if the Israelis entity did not listen to them to stop the killing machine against the Palestinian, how come they will stop being saying that there is no such Palestinian state? And that's the announcement. They said they want Gaza to be demolished and they want to annex West Bank in addition to Golan Heights and southern of Syria. So their plans are different from what MBS said with France, and I think it's only giving more time to the Israelis to do their killings against the Palestinian. And I don't think, after all the glorious that Netanyahu is feeling now,
okay,
with his craziness.
But if this is a conspiracy, why this anger, Dr. Ali? A huge wave of anger.
They will not listen to what's going on, and they know it's a big plan, and they are a big player in it, the Israelis. They want to show that it is in the hand of the West to kill, it is in the hand of the West to stop killing, it is in the hand of the West, and especially United States, which is the main dominators of the area. They can stop it at any time. Now it's not the time. It's not the real time right now. It's not the appropriate time to stop what's going on after 2 years.
Yes, but that does not explain the huge anger that we have actually witnessed during reports, during our own observations,
Israelis,
to the reports coming in from the Hebrew media, whether through the UN ambassador, whether through Netanyahu himself, where he said that when I return back, I will have the strongest response to this recognition of a Palestinian state.
Well, Netanyahu is a fugitive now. There is a big verdict against him in the International Criminal Court, and he should be jailed right now. And according to the international law, he has no right to declare any declaration worldwide, and he should not be listened to. But the main point here, as always, the Israeli entity play the role of the victim. And even though they are killing the Palestinian, and the international declaration is the recognition of the Palestinian state, the Israeli is still He's killing the Palestinian, and he's trying to play the role of victim. And right now, he's saying that if the declaration will be implemented on the ground, mm-hmm. it means that Israel lost the war and Hamas is the victorious in this war.
Okay, so looking for empathy, as you highlighted, worldwide and using it for their own advantage. However, we remain with the war of extermination in Gaza, where doubts continue about the possibility of fully achieving its goals. A former Israeli military intelligence official pointed out that there are mistakes in the Gaza City operation and that the matter requires an administrative decision for a full resolution. Do you think that the Israeli military is pursuing a wrong strategy in Gaza, and how costly will this operation be on them?
Let me briefly say in what's going on. Israel is winning points, is winning tactical margin of what's going on in the area, especially in Gaza. But I think Israelis are like a cubic ice cube that is melting in the middle of the desert. They believe that they are big, but they are melting within the 2 years of fighting against the Palestinian, and still up to now, all their plans went into the drain. None of them could, let's say, gain what's their goal from it. We are talking about freedom of the captives or the POWs, or exchange of them by the Palestinian, or dominating.
But
or
haven't
Gaza.
They severely weakened Hamas, Dr. Ali?
They are both weakened. Not only Hamas. We are talking about after 2 years, strategic-wise, we are talking about freedom fighters. They are countable. Israeli soldiers and army, I think there are more than 650,000 soldiers. Up to now, they could not finish the war in 360 square kilometers in Gaza. So in
against
15,000 freedom fighters.
Okay.
And now we are talking about huge infantries, big, huge mechanized platoons and brigades. We are talking about huge firepower from sky fighter jets. And up to now, there is no achievement.
You're speaking about technological advancement yet.
Up to now, Hamas is still fighting. Yesterday, there were two missiles launched against Ashdod from Gaza.
Yes.
It means that Hamas is continuing until the end, and this war will not stop until the last soldier of Israel or the last soldier of
Hamas. But do you see the same analysis? Would you share the same analysis when we speak about the strategy that's been used in the Gaza City specifically?
Exactly. Gaza City is the core of what's going on in Gaza. And I believe, we all heard Netanyahu saying that he wants to defeat Hamas. He wants to occupy Gaza City. So it means that up to now he did not defeat Hamas, and he did not occupy Gaza. It means that the incursion is different from domination. Israel is trying to do some incursions up and down, and they are trying to kill and destroy the civilians. They are trying to make the starvation for the whole population of Gaza. But up to now, did not succeed.
Okay.
What we are talking about after 2 years, and still the Gazian fighting against the Israelis.
Okay, in Israeli security circles, however, of course, concern is mounting over the possibility of soldiers of the occupation being captured by the resistance during the ground assault on Gaza City. Security institutions in the entity also estimate that there is a possibility of Israelis being kidnapped abroad, specifically in Taba and Sinai, as one of the Hebrew media correspondents said. Why do you think that the threat level for Israelis abroad has been increasing? And also, do you foresee a potential kidnapping of Israelis, as the report highlighted, in Taba and Sinai?
Well, if they are talking about the kidnapping of the Zionist Jewish people abroad, they are kidnapping every day. The Israeli are kidnapping Palestinians, and they are kidnapping everywhere by Mossad or others, kidnapping people from everywhere around the world. But always trying to play the victim role is not working anymore, not in the United States. We can see like a generation fight now going on between the supporting of the Jewish state and the supporting of the patriotism inside the United States. I think now talking about the possibility of Israelis being, will be, may be kidnapped around, I think the Israeli now, the Israeli entity, and I think the research institutes understand exactly by expanding the war by Israel with the surrounding countries, it means they are afraid of transfer the war between armies to be between directly between the people of the surrounding countries against the people of the Jewish state.
So the fears are justified, in your opinion?
I think it. They know because of their what they're doing, because of what they committing against the Palestinian and the others. I think maybe it will be normal for them to take it into consideration.
Okay. Israeli social media, however, witnessed a campaign by the mothers of Zionist soldiers in Gaza, both living and dead. They attack Netanyahu for sending their sons into the Gaza war. Here are some of the comments.
Farid Anbar. Remember, mothers, Netanyahu said he was ready for 200 soldiers killed in Gaza. He does not care about their blood. Two more were killed at the Allenby crossing, and four soldiers in Rafah. More and more families are joining the bereaved families in Israel. Ma Oz. There is not much difference between a mother of a soldier fighting now in Gaza and a mother of a captive soldier. Both have a son in Gaza who may die as a result of the IDF operations. Why don't the soldiers' mothers go out to protest, as the four mothers did in the Lebanon War? Holy Smock. When four soldiers fall, six Israeli civilians are killed. Soldiers commit suicide, a policeman is killed, and 11 funerals are held in a single day in cemeteries across Israel. The scum of the administration rush to smile at political events. The mothers sit crying, the fathers weep, the children pray. Meanwhile, they laugh for the camera. Damn you, destroyers of Israel.
Moving to the occupied West Bank, which is witnessing escalation in both attacks and resistance operations, where the occupation army uncovered sites for manufacturing rockets in three areas of the West Bank. What does it mean now when the occupation army uncovered three sites for manufacturing rockets in the West Bank, and what it claimed were rockets in the occupied West Bank?
Yeah, I believe that the Israelis are now trying to prepare some excuses in advance in order to annex West Bank, and it's not secure anymore. So even though they didn't show the big area where they found such rockets, and as I see, it's very, very, let's say, weak rockets. I believe that Hamas is well advanced to do such rockets as they show.
So you're saying they're using this as a pretext for annexation in the West Bank?
Exactly. They are trying to say, they already declared in the Knesset that they want to annex West Bank to and the Jordanian Valley to the Israeli entity. Now they...
But there, as, but as there isn't a rising threat to the Israelis, a resistance threat to rise
I think
against the Israelis in the West Bank.
I think that the threat is Israel against the Palestinian, who control the security, who controls the big armies, and I'm talking about armies because they are different brigades and divisions, who control the borders between West Bank and Jordan, who control Philadelphia path, who control all the borders around West Bank and around Gaza. The Israelis are controlling all the borders. The Israelis are killing the people. The Israelis are trying to let's invent and create new excuses to put the spotlight on.
But obviously, the resistance over there, Dr. Ali, will not stay silent.
I think it will.
Do you think there will be a rise in the resistance movement?
Of course, sooner or later. I think, as we remember, Jenin camp all the time. The freedom fighters there were fighting against the Israelis, and Israel demolished, destroyed the whole camp once, twice, three times, four times since the 1987. And up to now, we're still seeing freedom fighters coming to fight against the Israelis. I think just with little coordination with the freedom fighters from the Palestinian Authority, it will be better. But there is a big coordination between the Palestinian Authority and the Israelis against the freedom fighters. And this is the main weak points of the resistance in West Bank.
Okay, and to the Yemeni front supporting Gaza, which continues despite repeated Israeli attacks on Yemen, with Vitality, where rockets and drones are launched almost daily. The Hebrew media indicated that one drone succeeded a few days ago in striking a hotel in Eilat. Obviously, the Yemeni front continues to cause pain to all the Israelis. What does this reflect in terms of repercussions on Netanyahu's administration and also on the occupation army, Dr. Ali?
As I said at the beginning, that all the parties are now weakened, including the Israeli entity. So nobody has to claim that Israel is still more powerful than the others. Mm. And we can see what's going on in Gaza and in Lebanon. And also the main front is Yemen. Yemen, they have the new technology of new rockets, new big missiles that can go inside, and new kind of drones. We are talking about some Mark 4. They open a new corridors to let the drones arrive quietly and smoothly inside the occupied territory. So it means now, as what's going on against Gaza, Yemen is trying to do against the Israelis.
Okay.
We can see economic-wise, military-wise, and strategic-wise,
okay.
Yemen is dominating the sea, dominating the tracks of the ships mm-hmm. going in and out.
As long as Gaza is under siege, and that's
siege,
a promise
yes,
made by
exactly,
them. Dr.
Exactly.
Ali Hamia, military and strategic researcher, thank you very much for joining us in today's episode.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is Back to Reality.
Back to Reality. Back to
it's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to this groundbreaking new series, Back to Reality. We are bringing you back to reality, and there is a great thing that has taken place as we live and breathe. We've been discussing the three letters of the last decade. That's right, it's been an entire decade, perhaps even more, since the first letter of the leader was released to the public. Then came the second letter, then came the third one, which is going to be the topic of our discussion today. I'm your humble host, Muzaffar Haider. Here in the studio today, we have with us our dear beloved Sayyid. Sayyid, how are you doing, man?
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm fine, I'm fine. Can you give a brief introduction, sir? Kind of.
Alright, well.
Kind of.
Okay. Where do I start? I got a really long resume.
Uh-huh. Just give me the things that you keep on the top of the resume.
I'll keep it short. Currently, I'm just a student of the seminary of Bum, studying Hadith and Quran. I'll leave the rest for later.
I'm doing Tafsir and Quran.
There we go. We're both in the same field.
We're seeing explosions, absolute explosions of student protests throughout the Western world, particularly in America. And these student protests have gone to the extent where lots of professors are being arrested, students are being arrested too. There's police brutality taking place. It's international news. It's all over the place. And that's happening on the one side. On the other side, we have the leader who has stated that you guys who are protesting, you are on the right side of history. And that in and of itself is like a huge statement. Subhanallah.
Yeah.
It kind of makes me wish I was back in the UK or even America. But then a step further, we see that there's a parallel being drawn between the movement that is taking place amongst the youths in the West and the global resistance front. And so I wanted to actually open up the discussion by asking you, Sayyid, what is the correlation here?
The letter of the Sayyid came at a very sensitive time. And if you remember, the previous letters of the Sayyid himself was also directed to the youth. And he was trying to, in the first two, he was more like trying to get them to be more aware of the Islamic kind of mindset and thinking. Mm. Don't think that we're terrorists.
Mm.
Don't take your information from political sources. Come to us and we'll explain to you. Even he himself, in the previous letters, he tried to speak to them in a way where he was trying to clarify things to them.
Mm-hmm.
That you guys, or at least the West, have been pushing this agenda. They reinforced Al-Qaeda, they reinforced Daesh, they reinforced this and that. Their action made people do this kind of things, you know what I mean? So he was trying to bring that kind of argument. Beside, he was trying to highlight the fact that come to the true teachings of Islam and see how it is. With this one, no. With this letter, because things have changed.
Mm-hmm.
See, the people in the West, regardless of their faith, regardless of their color, regardless of their nationality, they all stood on one front. Now, whether it is us and them, we're both on the same front, which is to fight oppression. And this is what the Sayyid ended his letter with, the version of the Quran.
Mm-hmm.
Because what we as human beings, regardless of who we are, we always share a few things, which is innate, which is, you know, initial programming by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Virtues. One of these virtues that we hold all the time, regardless of our faith or religion, is justice.
Mm.
We want to see justice.
Even a child can understand when injustice takes place.
But how justice is applied, obviously that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But now, so we, at least in the resistance side, we've constantly been trying to stand up against oppression. We're trying to uphold justice, whether it is in Palestine, whether it is in Yemen, Iraq, Syria, Afghanistan, Pakistan, wherever it is might be. We've been trying to stand with them, with the oppressed, to fight the oppressors. Now, a new front has joined us, which is the youth, whether they are in America or other countries, or the people who protest in different parts of the world. And the Sayyid was very precise when he used his words. He said, now you are part of the resistance.
Mm-hmm.
That we, you and us, we're no longer two different teams. Now we fight in the same team. And and this is the first time where you guys on the first, or at least what his words were, on the right hand of history.
Right side of history.
Right side of history. I read one of the American parliaments or spokesperson or statesman, whatever they want to call themselves. He said, if you listen to Khamenei, you are on the wrong side of history. I said, well, definitely. We are on the wrong side of history based on your history, not on our history.
Mm.
So this is what scared them the most, is that because now the Sayyid kind of welcomed them as new members of the resistance. Now, and these are the future generations of America.
Mm.
These will be your parliament members, maybe your presidents, people in power. So when you have so much young, open-minded educated intellectuals who have that mindset that we need to resist oppression, and oppression by who? By the Zionists, who are backed by the Americans, backed by the West. So literally what they're doing is they are going against their own government. And this is something that scares them the most. So, and this is where they come trying to get this.
I just want to throw this in there as well. In the previous letters, we saw that he was highlighting how unjust those systems were.
Yeah.
That, like the American government itself, the British government itself. And now it seems like the people are actually, the youths are actually rising up against their own systems, which is unbelievable.
I think, see, the Sayyid, I mean, me and you, we know this, right? He has a very far sight, right? If I remember correctly, in his second letter, he said, in the near future, things will change. You will see a lot of change, right? And this is it. This is one of the changes that's happening that the Sayyid was talking about.
Oh.
It's called Basira. Should I translate that?
Yeah, please do.
In insight.
A little foresight.
Foresight. It's Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives people certain...
Basira. It would be...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so he gives them certain... their taqwa, their piety, which is a state where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala makes them foresee things. Makes them see things a lot clearer. Because sometimes, I don't want to go far. Sometimes even within our own communities, within our own system, you have people who... not only don't care about this Philistine situation, but they even against the Sayyid himself. Yet they say, "Harbun liman harabakum, salamun liman salamakum,"
which is very hypocritical. War with those who are at war with me, and at peace with
them. But then they are, on the other side as well. So this is a problem. So the Sayyid, alhamdulillah, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has given him this foresight or this insight where he can see into history. He can see into the future. So the history he can see in the future, and this is
calling. Want to clarify, we're not saying that he's a soothsayer or that he.
No,
we're not doing that.
Sometimes look what political
Erdogan,
right? These guys, their job is to look at the events that passed, the events that are happening now, and they can have like a view of what might these events lead in the future. And this is just natural. This is not like you said, a sayer, a magician, or he has this magic ball where he sees the feet now. But it's just the way the events are taking place.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
Even me and you, we know very well, because we have a hadith, we have a Quran, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has promised there will come a wa'd al-akhirah, the ja'a wa'd al-akhirah, that's it, they're gone. We've been told. So all the events are leading to that moment of the, how should I call it? Help me out. Where the Zionists will not exist.
Yeah.
Okay? They will be completely in existence. They will be wiped out. And all these events were leading to that point. So the Sayyid, obviously, he had that in mind when he was speaking. He's like, okay, this is it. And I think we're getting closer and closer. Wasn't he the one who said, we give them 25 years and after that, they'll be gone?
And 2040. We're just waiting for 2040 because that's maximum in how long it's going to take before the Zionists.
2037.
It should. I mean, it could happen next year.
Yeah, it could happen. And could be before that. Sooner, like when the Tufa al-Aqsa started, he said, you guys... You quickly went to your demise.
I saw a statement just yesterday from the leader. I think it was yesterday. And it said, soon the Americans are going to stop supporting Israel.
They will?
I was like, what? This is huge.
They have no choice.
That is crazy.
The craziest thing I ever read in my entire life is today when the American Congress, they wanted to... No, they already condemned... The what do they call it? What court that global court thingy? What do they call it? The
UN, the global.
No, they have like this court with
international.
The international court.
Okay.
Because they put Netanyahu on the list of criminals.
Yeah.
Right. So the American Congress, they want to not only condemn, but they issued a fine or whatever against the court itself. Like, how do you do this? How do you establish this court?
How do you
not for justice, but to listen to us?
How do you convict a court?
Yeah.
You know, you can convict like a person when you're convicting the court itself. Mm. So you can see the insanity, and it will reach a point where people say, okay, this is just ship it. We won't stand for this.
Well, I think that you've highlighted a key point there. You can see the insanity.
Yeah.
The insanity has always been there.
Yeah.
Just everybody can see it now.
But it was covered.
It was always net.
Yeah, and that was very clear.
They were very good at hiding it before.
Yeah, very good at hiding it.
They took.
I think even Said, I'm not sure if it was a Said Dreber himself or someone else, he said what the Americans or the West do at least, he said they create a fog.
Mm.
When there's a fog created, you can't see much.
Yeah.
Your sight will become limited to up to your feet.
Mm.
So this is what they've always been doing, creating that fog. Now, obviously, now people can see through that. It's no longer working. It's no longer effective.
Yeah.
People can see through it, especially the shooters. And that's why they said he was directly addressed the youth. And if you notice, his speech and his address was very short. It wasn't like the previous ones. It was very short, very precise, and easy words. Like when I was reading the previous one. He used a lot of big words. At least the translation was really hard to pronounce.
No, I think you're right.
But in this one, it was very short, very precise, and very simple to understand as well.
Mm.
And I think this is one of the things that scared them the most. I'm not sure if you've done your research in terms of Google. Google and the internet and the media, the social media, they tried to block this letter. They were out of their way. That now, if you Google it, I think only the same site will come up, maybe a few other news outlets.
Mm.
But they try so hard. If you put it on YouTube, they won't even give you a warning. They won't even give you like a strike. They will just shut you down immediately.
Huh? Really?
Yeah.
Thanks for the heads up.
Do you know why? Because I done it myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Good job. All right. What they just?
So I put the speech of the Sayyid in Arabic.
Uh-huh.
Within a matter of five to 10 minutes, the channel was completely shut down.
Ooh.
Like, deleted. Right? They completely deleted it with a letter saying, you violate all our terms. And I'm like, dude, it's a freedom of speech.
Yeah.
And the man was just talking.
Mm.
Like, how was it? Why is this so threatening to you? I think the Sayyid himself mentioned that in his letter. I'm not sure. I think it's the second one he mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
He said, you guys are the future generation. You have to build based on what you know. That was definitely the second letter.
I recall something.
Yeah, he said, because you will be the future generation that will take over. We won't exist. We won't be alive by then. It's going to be up to them. So they are the future themselves.
This is all leading up to that great climactic moment of the Zuhur of Imam Zaman.
Yeah.
Inshallah, we're going to discuss more in the next episode. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. Sayyid, thank you so much for being with us. We need to continue this discussion, inshallah.
Sure.
From ourselves, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again. Thank you.
Long ago, Iranians used to wake up to the melodic sound of one of the iconic masters of classical Persian music, Hasan Kassai's song, Salam or Greetings. The renowned ney player who found the hidden potentials of the traditional Persian ney. In a way, you can say that all the reed flute players in Iran, directly or indirectly, are his pupils. Since ancient times, the ney or reed flute has been favored for producing rhythmic sounds. Made from a plant that can be found all across the world, the ney or reed. By studying the illustrations on the walls of the tombs in Egypt and ancient Greece, and according to the findings in Peru, this end-blown musical instrument can be dated back to at least 3,000 years ago. Considered as the forefather of the modern flute, the ney has always been known for its rich and sad sound. Neys can have different sounds depending on the location of the reed bed and the weather of the region in which the reeds grow, which in turn determine the length and thickness of the reed stems. In Iran, we have many musical instruments with different structures that are made using reeds. All of these wind-blown instruments have experienced many changes over the years, both in structure and finger placement. The most important reed flute in Iran is Neye Haft Band, or the seven-segment ney. Because of the depth of its sound, the ney has always been favored by Sufis and mystic artists, and has been depicted in many illustrations, such as the wall paintings at the famous 40-column pavilion in Isfahan. In Persian poetry, renowned poets such as Rumi and Hafiz have mentioned the ney countless times in their poems. A typical Persian ney has seven segments, six knots and six holes, one of which is on the back. The pitch of the ney varies depending on the finger arrangement. A highly skilled flute player can reach more than three octaves, but it's common to have several additional reed flutes to cover different pitch ranges or for playing technically difficult passages. The upper edge of the ney is placed inside the mouth between the two upper front teeth. By making use of a new finger placement chart, which was created by Master Hasan Nahid, playing the reed flute became much easier. Master Nahid has spent the better part of his life, more than 50 years, training young and enthusiastic pupils in the art of the ney, and has produced many outstanding players, players such as Mohsen Roustan. There are many ways to play the ney. For example, in one technique, a small stream of air is directed with the tongue over the entrance of the ney, while the upper lip surrounds the upper part of the ney. By moving the lip and tongue, you can change the pitch and the tone.
Like learning a new language, you have to know how to hold the ney, all the correct forms of finger placements. You also have to train your diaphragm so that you don't run out of breath. After all, the ney is a wind instrument. And now we continue.
Even though both timbre and loudness have an infinite variety, in a sense, the ney didn't used to have a part in orchestras because of the restrictions of its range. All that changed in 1950 when Master Kassai fully revolutionized playing the ney and gave it a prominent role. The instruments that complement the sound of the ney in duet and group performances are string, percussion, and classical instruments. ¶¶
make a really good ney out of just any reed. The best ones used to make this musical instrument come from the reed beds found in the dry and desert regions around the cities of Kashan, Qom, and Isfahan. Once they're cut, they're left to dry for 2 whole years in a shadowed area. Then they're sun-dried for 1 whole summer. That is when they can be worked.
Making a ney also requires a lot of hands-on experience, from heating its uneven notes to coating it with a mixture made from toasted ground hulled sesame seeds, to making the holes, bandaging its knots with deerskin and wood glue, and finally decorating the piece. A ney maker needs to know all the techniques and timings.
Like we said, the ney has been mentioned extensively in the old poetry of Iran. So it's not surprising that here it is that very same poetry that's been burned onto this piece of reed and has been used to decorate this beautiful ney.
How can we talk about the Persian ney without naming Naib Asadullah, the first master in Iran who was well-versed in playing the Persian ney? According to Master Asadullah, I was the one who took the reed flute from the sheep's pen to the king's court. When God created man, he blew a part of his spirit into the clay, the breath of life. Our spirit longs to be reunited with its origin, longs to be whole again. Perhaps in his most famous poem, Rumi says that the sound of the ney calling out to the reed bed is reminiscent of that longing. This is Gulnar Farnoodi for Iran.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Good evening to all our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Very nice to have you with us. We'll start this hour's programs with our news bulletin that will be followed by today's special daily mix format program that deals with various Islamic and Iranian occasions. Our radio productions feature will be next. And our final program this hour is Leader's Speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. Stay with us for this hour.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
4 more Palestinians have fallen victim to relentless Israeli air and ground attacks across the besieged Gaza Strip. Spain has called for the admission of Palestine as a full member of the United Nations after more countries announced their recognition of the Palestinian statehood. And finally, the Iranian president has slammed unilateralism and bullying nations as he heads to New York to attend the 80th session of the United Nations General Assembly. Welcome, everyone, your world news. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. Well, more Palestinians have fallen victim to relentless Israeli air and ground attacks across the besieged Gaza Strip. Around 20 Palestinians were killed in fresh attacks since dawn. The majority of the fatalities that took place in Gaza City alone, which remains the epicenter of the intensified airstrikes. According to reports, Israeli forces detonated explosive-laden robots in the cities Tal el-Hawa and Sabra neighborhoods, as well as in the Al-Shati refugee camp. Meanwhile, Israel's ongoing blockade of aid continues to take a heavy toll on civilians. A 5-year-old girl died at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis after days of struggling with malnutrition. The death toll from the U.S.-Israeli genocide since October 2023 has exceeded 65,300, with nearly 166,800 others injured. Well, now joining us with latest developments on the ground from Deir el-Balah is our correspondent, Ghada Ibrahim. Ghada, every day we come in and the number has jumped. The casualties have jumped, the injured have jumped, and even the one child that has been dying every few days, we have reports now that up to 3 children